Today is December 4th, 1984, and this interview is taking place at the Audiovisual Center at Morehead State University. My name is Sandy Scheel. I'm interviewing Gene Callahan and Kathy Murphy about the Fargo-Moorhead Junior League. Kathy Murphy was president in 1965 and 66, and Gene Callahan was president in 1969 and 70. Gene, I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about the origin and history of the Fargo-Moorhead Junior League.
Well, it began as a junior service league in Fargo, and we worked many long years aiming toward membership in the Association of Junior Leagues. And Kathy was president the year we were formally accepted, and that was a very big day for all of the members and for Fargo-Moorhead to be recognized as a city worthy of a junior league.
Kathy, could you tell us how the service league was formed originally? And
yes, a group of women in Fargo organized the first junior service league in the year 1954. It was organized with 20 charter members, but I think those charter members always had in mind trying to qualify to become members of the Association of Junior Leagues. There were a couple of people who had been members of junior leagues in other cities, and so the organization from the first had that objective in mind. And so within the next year, members from Moorhead were invited to join to broaden the base of membership. And I think from the very beginning it was known and understood that it would take 11 years to fulfill all of the requirements and qualifications set up by the Association of Junior Leagues, which is what happened. It took 11 years to qualify for that application for national membership.
That's having a long future plan.
Yes, long-range planning.
So the Junior League is a national organization as well as a local.
Oh, yes.
Okay. When it became a junior league, were there any membership requirements? How many people did you need to have as members?
Well, I think the membership requirement was that you must have approximately 100 members of the league, and I'm not sure how rigid a requirement that was, but it was always a number that we aimed to maintain through an admissions policy.
Okay. What was the purpose? Why do you think the organization was started originally? Was there a specific need in the community that got these women started?
I believe so. They organized in order to maintain a particular project in the community, which was to set up the mechanics for the Salk vaccine trial, which was going to be conducted in the spring of 1954. So they did organize with a very specific local purpose in mind, and from that they expanded into a fundraising project the next year, which was the raffling of a dress, which seems so naive when you think of the elaborate next to new sale that has come about as the major fundraising activity.
Since you've mentioned the next to new sale, Kathy, could you tell us a little bit about, or Gene, I'm sorry, could you tell us a little bit about the next to new sale? You were chairman of that sale.
I was. 1 year was, I don't recall the year, but about 67 perhaps.
Okay.
At one time was a sale that lasted 3 or 4 days, and we kept cutting it down and extending the hours, and I think it's most successful now when it's a one-day push rather than a week-long struggle by everyone, and we've increased the sales every year and increased the merchandise and expanded it.
I think Gene was a chairman in one of the first years the sale was held in the Civic Auditorium in Fargo.
Yes, that's right.
It was a big move out of smaller places into that large space.
It was.
And we did organize into a lesser amount of time, but a larger space to function in time. That was a moment of transition.
Yep.
Have the funds always been used as for community projects?
Oh, yes, exclusively.
Okay, could you tell us a little bit about the categories of membership in Junior League?
Well, the sustainers are the group 40 years old and over, and the active members I don't believe there's a lower limit, is there, Sandy? At one time it was 18.
It's 22.
22 now.
Yeah.
22 to 40, the active category.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I guess that's it.
How about the process for joining the Junior League? Do you remember how you were invited into the league?
Well, my invitation arrived dramatically. I was on a vacation in Nassau in the Bahamas for the first time in my life and got this airmail special delivery letter that had to be answered immediately.
Oh, my
gosh. So it was by invitation. There is a complex admissions process of recommendations required by 2 to 3 active members who had knowledge of the person being recommended, and then an invitation extended and accepted with an understanding of the volunteer work and commitment that was required. Now, I understand the admissions policy has been changed since then, but that mm-hmm. was the program that held while we were active members.
Is that how your admissions
yes.
was handled
mm-hmm.
also?
It hadn't changed.
And mine was also by written mm-hmm. invitation, but now it is an open mm-hmm. admission mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. 2 active members, or active and a sustainer mm-hmm. as a sponsor, which is nice. If someone is
yes.
interested, they
That's
can
right.
apply, and you know they're really interested.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How about your meetings? Where did you have your meetings, and how often, and...
Well, very often they were in the treetop room, weren't they,
yes.
Kathy?
I think our regular meetings were held
most of the time
in the treetop room.
Mm-hmm.
They were monthly meetings with a board meeting which preceded perhaps the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was in a private home usually.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Board membership ranged, I think, around 20 members were members of the board of
mm-hmm.
directors.
Mm-hmm.
But there was an elaborate committee set up or structure within the league also, and committees always met in individual homes. And much of the work of the league was conducted through the planning of committees and then through the operation of projects.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But the big general meetings were usually held at the treetop or someplace?
They were luncheons at the treetop, and they were very... formal events.
In the beginning, everyone wore a hat and gloves.
Yes, it's unfortunate we don't have better photos, but it was a real parade of
yes.
that would be interesting people in clothing.
Oh, so they were always luncheons in.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, gosh,
mm-hmm.
that's wonderful. I love it. What about the dues at that time? Do you recall? Were they collected... Like now, there's annual dues and there's social fees. Were they the same at that time?
Well, they were less, of course. I think they were about $25.
Mm-hmm.
Social fee, I think, was $12
or something
like that.
I don't really recall that.
I'm not sure.
But it was paid on an annual basis.
In March 1st
mm-hmm.
or something.
Right.
At that time, did Junior League ever look for or receive grants of money from other agencies, or was it funded by itself?
We did. Grantsmanship was, I think, begun the year I was president, if I'm not mistaken. And at that time, we began to do things with another organization, finding a co-sponsor for a project and then seeking grants. I think the grantsmanship was quite new at that time.
I would think so.
Mm-hmm. It was.
The Junior League was probably sort of a forerunner in that then, in mm-hmm. volunteer
I think so.
Agencies.
It was a national policy.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that.
Right, I think we changed our objectives and program structures considerably in order to qualify for national membership. And one of the requirements I recall was that any project must be adopted with the outgoing end in sight of being able to turn it over to either another organization or some other area of the community. Projects were not meant to be eternal commitments.
Mm-hmm. Public affairs, too, was just beginning at that time.
Mm-hmm.
We had always stayed out of public issues, and mm-hmm. at that time we were just creeping into them very cautiously.
Do you remember any of the issues that you were monitoring at that time?
Oh, dear. We had a seminar. What in the world?
I
think it was drug. One of the seminars was trying to... establish a government program for drugs, prevention of drug abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And we did have a big public affairs seminar on that. Oh, and also we were beginning to include the community in more of our public affairs programs.
A major seminar dealt with intergenerational communication,
yes.
If you recall.
Dialogue, yes.
Dialogue. Mm-hmm. And
Eva Schindler Raymond came.
Yes, and mm-hmm. conducted.
Mm-hmm. Who was it that conducted?
Dr. Eva Schindler Raymond, and we had a big seminar at First Lutheran Church called An Intergenerational Dialogue, and that was at a time in history when there was great rebellion among the teenagers, and there was a tremendous gap that I haven't seen since. And she was trying to, all over the country, trying to bridge this gap.
And then this meeting was open to the community, anybody who wanted to?
We invited a lot of interested people, and I think anyone...
The attendees were invited.
I think anyone really interested could possibly have come, but a lot of professional people attended.
That's great. What were the expectations of a member of Junior League at that time? What were your obligations to League?
Well, there was an hour requirement on how many volunteer hours.
Half a day a week.
Were required. And it was, a considerable amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to all of the committee work and the structural work of the League, which was not credited towards your volunteer time. Volunteer time had to be given in service to a very specified project. So it was a very time-demanding organization and program to pursue.
Okay. Can you remember any people who you think played specific key roles in the organization of Junior League? Was there any particular person who was a real driving force?
Well, I associate the beginnings very much with Ann Weibel and Fran Akeley.
Yes,
mm-hmm. Were two people mm-hmm. who were, I think, very strong local organizers. I'm sure there were others, but mm-hmm. those two immediately come to mind as being
Fran. Mm-hmm. Very
notable mm-hmm. people in starting and sustaining the program in those early years.
Yeah, I am going to be interviewing Fran
about the
early years
yes,
of Junior League. How have the members of Junior League worked into the community? What kind of roles do you see that they have had in the community?
Well, they've been catalysts, I think, in beginning all sorts of new ventures. Is that what you mean, mm-hmm. Sandy?
Well, yeah, I guess, I'm aware of the purpose of Junior League, that, to train volunteers, and I guess I feel fairly strongly. I've seen a lot of my contemporaries go into the community and right from volunteer work to paid positions, and I wonder if you've seen, a lot of your friends and contemporaries also do the same thing.
Yes, I think the League does give you a strong sense of community participation and responsibility, and these people probably would have been involved in serious ways in their community anyhow, mm-hmm. but some people who've been particularly visible from those early years, and I'm thinking of Moorhead people, I guess today, are Barbara Glassrud, who is the chairperson of the art department at Concordia. She organized the very first Red River annual art exhibit, which was one of the long-time projects of the League for nearly 20 years, I believe.
Gosh.
That was a popular project. And Phyllis Thysel has been very active in so many ways, including political.
Mm-hmm.
So she's been a very strong mm-hmm. community supporter.
The Lake Agassiz Arts Council didn't
right.
tell us
mm-hmm.
something
was an
to
instrumental
do with that.
Person.
Cherry Herbst.
Mm-hmm. Right. I've been involved with the Minnesota State Arts Board for 5 years now, and I'm serving as the current chairperson for that. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of us mm-hmm. have continued to be active in mm-hmm. the community long after our active membership
yeah.
in the League.
I think
expired.
You get so used to doing it, those habits are hard to break.
Right.
Were there any members while you were in league that went on to hold either area positions or national positions?
Within the league structure?
Yeah, from junior league.
I don't think so.
We were such a new league.
Right.
Was Agnes Harrington maybe the first one?
I think that may be so.
Okay, and then we've had Sue Andrews and Kathy Hawkins since then.
Right.
Okay. I just would like you to tell us a little bit about your executive committees, each one of you, the people that you worked with and how they functioned. I mean, for me, I am president of Junior League this year, and we meet in my house once a month with a large pot of coffee and discuss all the problems that could possibly be considered. A group of people that I've really become very fond of working so closely with all year long. And I thought perhaps you'd like your executive committee to be recorded.
Yes. Well, the people who served on my executive committee were Margot Paulson, Rita Trainer, Edith Dawson, and Charlotte Rufer. And in the year 1965-66, we were expecting or waiting for word on our admission to AJLA. So it was a kind of tense year to be functioning. I think that news came to us in about February. I remember being at a meeting in Charlotte's house and taking the telephone call from New York. Mm-hmm. I still remember.
I do too.
Being in the kitchen, my hands were shaking because it represented 11 years of commitment and work from so many people. Mm-hmm. And it would have been incredible to have failed, I guess. But at the same time, we had had word of cities in Montana that had applied and had not been, or had been put on hold for a certain length of time, and we were very eager to get word that we had been accepted.
Well, could you tell me just a little bit about the process? I mean, were there, how many visits were there, and that kind of, didn't they come and visit several times?
Yes, they did. I think for 3 or 4 years, a delegation from the national organization came for what were called inspection visits, and elaborate plans were made to tour these people to every possible local resource and spot. Always they seemed to be scheduled in March or April during a blizzard. You could count on it. Just absolutely count on that. But my favorite recollection from those years reflects the kind of planning people did. There was always some indecision about where they should be housed. And because a couple of members had husbands with interests in a motel or hotel complex, it was decided they should stay in neutral territory. So they were scheduled at the Gardner Hotel on sort of its last lap, just before it was turned over to new ownership. And the girls in charge of the arrangements went down to hold a rehearsal with the bellboys, who probably hadn't functioned as bellboys in some time. These were very temporary, temporarily assigned bellboys. So I think we had either 3 or 4 inspection visits, which were an annual event in the spring. And perhaps we had had one in the fall of that year. And so we were notified shortly after the last inspection visit.
That's wonderful. I love that story. So did they give you then specifics when they came, things, I suppose, in the bylaws?
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Right.
Oh, that's wonderful.
They were very helpful, and visits were, and they were very realistic people. People did go to elaborate measures to be sure they were well taken care of.
I'm sure it's a little tense for everybody. It was something you wanted.
Then
Jean, can you tell us about your executive committee?
Yes. Jenny Geston was vice president, Betty Trask, recording secretary, Carol Stout, corresponding secretary, and Jane Marcille, treasurer. And I look at my year here in the book, and it looks as though we gave away an awful lot of money. and this was new to the league before we, I don't think we gave money as such. We gave only two projects we were intimately involved with. And it really looks like a big giveaway that year.
Well, we had started doing some granting at that time.
Yes, we certainly did. And that was a direct result of the year before at the National Convention. They told us we were not to save money.
Were there any pet projects that year that you were especially fond of or had worked on?
Well, I think we talked a lot about establishing a drop-in center, and that was a forerunner of the crises call-in hotline.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, came about at a junior, a family service meeting. I was on the board, and that was a real favorite of mine because at that time there was a tremendous need for the hotline.
Well, hotline was established then in 1965, wasn't it, or right around then?
Well, I remember talking about it with this drop-in center. I can't really see that it's listed here.
Yeah, I think it was within just a year or so.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been around a long time.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, this is 69-70.
Right. Oh, it was 69-70. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I guess I'd like to know if there were any favorite things that happened, you know, to you, and not necessarily while you were president, but just in junior league. Was there any favorite thing or story that happened that, I'm sure you'll never forget about the bellboy rehearsal, but, you know, that kind of thing?
Well, fundraising was always done exclusively through a next to new sale, and perhaps still is, except for the year we voted to have a Follies.
Yes, that has to be the funniest story.
Yes, we voted to present to the community ourselves as performers. We were required to go out and sell advertising for the program. I still remember disliking that assignment in the extreme, having to approach friends and say, wouldn't you like to buy a $25 ad? Mm-hmm. We had a professional director. Were these called the Cargill?
The Cargill.
Cargill Follies.
They still do it.
I think they still do
they
it.
Certainly do.
Where a director came into town and everybody was required, I think, to be in the Follies, including our husbands, or many husbands.
Right.
We rehearsed for a period of 3 to 4 weeks with all our children lined up on benches watching Mother try to do the can-can. And always we were promised glittering costumes from a New York show.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I remember the disappointment the day the costumes arrived. They were much less than had been expected.
They were not glittering.
Not quite as glittering as we had hoped for. But the Follies went off quite well. They were presented in the Civic Auditorium, where the acoustics at the time were terrible, but
they
it
really
was perhaps
were.
Better mm-hmm. that people couldn't hear it. I'm not sure. But I think we did raise a lot of money.
We did.
But no one has ever seriously considered doing it.
That's it comes up every year,
does
though.
It
does. Do you remember what year that was? Was that before you were president?
Yes, it was.
It was.
I think so. Well, I think so, but
yeah,
I'm not certain. I think that was in our junior service league days.
It has to.
And not in our junior league days. Mm-hmm. But I know it's nationwide. It has been a popular. Here, 1960-61, the Red Bandana Follies netted $7,591.61.
Yeah, which was more than the next to new that year.
Yes,
you know, so it was a big fundraiser.
It certainly was.
It does still come up every year, and Cargill still does
it. Still doing
and
that.
Only people who never did it think of it fondly. You know,
I think so.
Yeah, the ones who look back and see the pictures think that would be just such a wonderful thing to do.
Well, we've had great fun smiling and laughing about it in retrospect, but I think at the time we were doing it, we weren't all as enthusiastic about the quality of this performance we were giving.
My mother-in-law, Virginia Shue, was in that.
Oh, I'm sure.
I think I have pictures where she's in that.
Yes, we were all in it.
Yeah.
It was a cast of thousands.
No exceptions.
None.
Well, how about you? Jean, do you have any favorite memories from...
Well, I agree with Kathy about the Follies, but I think personally, one of the aspects I enjoyed most was attending the National Convention in Coronado. It certainly broadened my personal horizons in thinking, and nationally as well as internationally. And
Your annual convention was held where?
Coronado, California.
Coronado. How about yours?
Yes. Well, I went to the first one we were qualified to attend, which was in the spring of 1966. Actually, Margo Paulson, as the incoming president, mm-hmm. was our delegate. But Bimmy Lundy and I were along in some capacity. And that meeting was held at the Fontainebleau Hotel in Miami Beach.
Oh, how
and
wonderful.
Was a very exciting mm-hmm. experience for all of us mm-hmm. because we got to see the light go on the national board indicating our league coming
mm-hmm.
into existence. And I think, as I described at the time, there were so many lights on the eastern seaboard, you could hardly tell when a new... new organization in New Jersey, for example, mm-hmm. came into new membership. Sure. I mean, we couldn't see it. But out in on the border of Minnesota, North Dakota, it was very barren of lights, and our light really yeah. shone.
And now we're talking here about a great big map that they have every year at the
yes.
Junior League Annual Convention, and there is a light on each city that has a junior league, and it's a very special thing to have that. I worked in Sioux Falls for a number of years, getting their service organization, which will get their light now this next year, and I'm a little disappointed that I won't be there to see that light go
yes.
on, because that would have been real exciting after you work
yes.
that many years to see that light go on.
Right.
And they do traditionally have the conferences in wonderful places, and they treat us very well.
I was very impressed at the quality of leadership
extremely.
Presented mm-hmm. through the structure of the national organization.
Mm-hmm.
It was inspirational.
They really do a wonderful job. Well, now I'm wondering how the two of you've sort of seen Junior League in a number of different phases. You know, I think it's changing, as it always, you know, Junior League has been able to change and kind of keep up with the times. I'm wondering how you see it in the community now. Do you think it's very visible? Do you think people are aware of it? Or is it still kind of a vague group of ladies out there?
I think it's very visible, and it's certainly a larger organization now as well.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the role in public issues and the roles of advocacy make it visible. And have an impact that's very important in shaping public policy.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly support that change in direction in mm-hmm. the league.
Well, back in 1969, if you were already getting involved in public policy and legislation.
It was very controversial at that time, Sandy.
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. You had to be very, very careful about the issues that you... there could not be a political overtone to any of them at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And even with those conditions, some people felt the league had no business becoming involved in a public issue. So it's been very heartening to see this evolve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it has come. You know, we've gone, you know, from what they traditionally call white glove issues,
mm-hmm.
Children's issues, that mm-hmm. kind of thing, to some that are less easy to deal with, abuse and that kind of thing. But I really think that probably Junior League was a forerunner in service groups, nonprofit organizations taking a stand on public issues, at least in this area.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, yes.
And now the community itself, I think, is more aware of it, made possible because of the next new sale, the size that it has gotten to be,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. I guess that I would like to know if there's, you know, from personal experiences with the Junior League, was there any specific reason that you joined? And were you aware of what Junior League was when you joined?
I don't think I was aware of the goals or objectives or the programs of the National mm-hmm. Association of Junior Leagues at the time. I think I joined for for local reasons, I thought it would be important to belong to a service organization. It was definitely described as a community service organization. That combined membership from Fargo and Moorhead, that seemed very important to me at the time, and I still think so.
Yes.
That we are one geographic place. There's unity there, and many of our programs locally span the two communities. Mm-hmm. And I thought an organization that deliberately sought membership from both states would be a good force in the community.
Now, I heard at one time, this is one of those rumors, one of those things that they said, that the Junior League was the first organization in Fargo-Moorhead to cross the river. Do either of you know if that is true?
Oh, I really don't know.
I guess I've heard that, too. I guess it would depend on your definition of organizations. But as far as a kind of publicly described group, I think there have been study clubs, kind of privately organized little smaller programs with less visibility. But as far as something that was intended to be a major service organization, I think that could well be true.
I think it could be, too.
Because, you know, even to this day, the Lions and a number of other service organizations still have their Fargo and their Moorhead organizations.
Right.
What were your reasons, Dean, for joining?
I think, the same reasons Kathy had. I did have an aunt who was very active in the Washington, D.C. Junior League, and I'd heard about it for years from her, about all the interesting projects and her involvement. So that really made me want to be a member, and I was so pleased when I was invited.
In going through your years as a Junior League person, as a Junior League member, what do you think is the, what did you get out of being a member of Junior League? Is there anything, you know, was it the training or the friendships, or was there anything that meant a great deal to you?
I think all those things, but I think, personally, I think it broadened my mind, as I've said before. I perhaps was narrow-minded in a lot of issues, and it really was an education for me.
Yeah.
I think it provided a training ground in community participation for young women. It's not easy to become involved, I guess, if you're not working, if you're not out in the marketplace working. So it was a wonderful channel for becoming far more involved and informed about the functioning of the community in which you live, and that was important. And the friendships that develop through working on projects and working so long and hard together are lifelong friendships, and I treasure those. It's been wonderful.
They really are. It's hard to work side by side with someone for a long time not become close friends. How many years were either of you involved? Do you remember how long you were active members in Junior League?
I was an active member for 10 or 11 years. I think I joined in 1956, and I was a member perhaps through 1967.
I think I joined about 2 or 3 years after you did, Kathy, and I think my year as president was my last year as an active member.
So about the same. Were women in a long time then? You said at that time they could join at 18. Did a lot of women join at 18?
Very few.
No.
Only one that I know of, and that was a daughter, I believe, and it really doesn't work out.
Well, it's a long time. It's a long time to be a member.
But that was nationally, I think that was, at that time, daughters of members often joined when they completed high school. And
I think that still is a policy in some East Coast or Southern leagues, that their entry age is still very low.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Was there anything that you recall while you were president that was a particular obstacle? You talked about the crisis hotline. Was that your most biggest challenge that year, was to get that going? I know that was a real need in the community.
I think we had a lot of cooperation with that particular project from a lot of people. I don't think we had a major hurdle. I think raising money and raising enough money was maybe most difficult in doing the things we wanted to do.
I think it was always hard to introduce a new project. People wanted to cling to the old mm-hmm. projects. Mm-hmm. The Opportunity School was the major project for so many years. We gave our money to it and our time. Innumerable people did their volunteer mm-hmm. work by assisting teachers in the Opportunity School. And it was very difficult to let go and develop a kind of rotating picture with projects or a different attitude toward ownership mm-hmm. and service toward them.
I think we would vacillate from 1 year mm-hmm. having arts mm-hmm. as a major concern and the next mm-hmm. year mm-hmm. having health and welfare mm-hmm. projects.
Mm-hmm. I think that still tends to be mm-hmm. the way it is. You know, a lot of the projects you work with something a little, you know, serious and in-depth for a while, and then you need something a little lighter for a mm-hmm. while to give you a break from it. You're both sustainers in
yes.
Junior League
oh,
right
yes.
now, and so we hope we're real active. is there anything you would like to see Junior League do? Is there a direction that you feel that we haven't gone into that we should, or something you would like to see the Junior League do?
Oh, I think you're doing beautifully. I'm so proud of all of the members.
Right. I think I haven't stayed in close enough touch mm-hmm. Through locally to have an idea about that. But I think the organization does very well and is something I've always been proud of being a member of and would continue to be.
And so you'd both do it again?
Absolutely, yes.
I think, you know, as three almost ex-presidents here, I'm getting close to the end of my term. I think myself it's been one of the most rewarding years I've ever had, and I have to agree with what you said about the friendships. You just mm-hmm. never forget those people. I think, is there anything else, any other stories you... Wonderful tales.
Yeah, no,
I'd like to thank both of you. It's been it's been fun for me because I have some of these stories I haven't heard before. Mm-hmm. So thank you both.
Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you.